Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Amy Panetta, and we're going to talk a little bit about her family, or probably a lot about her family, from Casa Marie and Avellino and several places in Italy. So welcome, Amy. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Bob, and thank you for having your podcast, because it's so inspiring to people, and the way that you have your beautiful conversational style is just inspirational. No, I come away with so many really wonderful gems in my work. So,
fantastic. Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I didn't even know I had a style, so I appreciate that.
it just seems to emerge. Yes.
Well, you know, I try to make it as just, well, you know, if we're sitting around the kitchen table and just, you know, talking about old times and talking about relatives and things like that. I know you're an accomplished musician, unlike myself, who is an unaccomplished musician.
No, I'm a music teacher. Yes, I teach independently, piano and the other instruments as well, often beginner instruments. But during the pandemic, I was fully online, so that was fun. Then now it's nice to be with people in person. It really, there's just nothing like it. So, but it's interesting how music and culture and food just are all wrapped up together, you know? And so this genealogy has been something that really has become it's always been there for me as an interest since I was very young. Alongside music, I was always interested in, different cultures of the world, but my own as well, understanding where I come from and my heritage, and utilizing any opportunity I could, any school project, to do something that reflected my interests or background, or things that I was, any newfound interest that I wanted to explore. So, you know, I remember even in elementary school, my grandmother we had this sort of multicultural was the word growing up. I think the language has changed around this, but we had kind of a multicultural sharing at school, and my grandmother made ricotta cookies for me to share, and I loved sharing that. And I loved hearing about, you know, everybody else in my classroom, whether they brought something from their whatever heritage they came from. I grew up in northern New Jersey, so so it just wove in. And by 2007, I started a family tree on Ancestry. Thankfully, I actually started it up when it was actually Christmas Eve, and I started it up the next day. We had relatives over, and usually it's the Christmas day is a little bit more relaxed than Christmas Eve, so we had the older generation over, and I figured that would be a fun time to have them, you know, tell me more about my background and how the family immigrated to New York and New Jersey. But it was very interesting to be able to get some details about, you know, the names of, you know, previous generations and siblings and things of my great grandparents and things, like the Capri side, where my grandmother's parents were from, that in particular. And I always had this longing to know more about where the Panetta side comes from. And I knew that there were some details that, you know, I would hear. I would ask questions every so often. Every few years, I'd ask, you know, a question. You know, I'd be over in my aunt's house, and I'd ask more questions, and she'd be able to rattle off some names and some details. But she didn't know exactly, like, the town and or the address or anybody to contact, or at least she didn't share that with me. It's interesting. I don't know if you found this, that the different generations had a different interest level when it comes to the genealogy and hanging on to these stories. Some wanted to kind of create their own identity, you know, you have the first generation, which arguably some people have different definitions for what's a first generation Italian American. You know, those who have immigrated and settled, I say, is the first generation. So they had their thing, they brought their culture, and they're basically Italian, but you know, is citizens as well. And then the next generation, the World War II generation, had to find their own identity, I think. And sometimes they embraced many parts of it, often the food, of course, but other things they kind of pushed aside. They might have been able to understand and communicate a bit in Italian, but they didn't really want to continue that on as much. So, and then the next generation comes, and then it seems like the fourth generation, we're the ones that are especially interested. Generation, you know, before, more nostalgia. Did you find it's that?
It's almost like it skipped a generation almost. I think you're right.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with my grandparents were born in Italy and, you know, came over. Some of my aunts and uncles from both my parents were born in Italy. So I grew up hearing the language, you know, constantly.
Yeah.
And still, you know, firsthand from the, you know, the generation. But I didn't think, you know, I was small and I didn't think to ask anybody about Italy or, you know, what it was like and things like that. But I think you're right. I think probably towards the end of my generation and going into the next one, it kind of got lost. And now there seems to be a resurgence. In fact, you know, I see people on Facebook asking, you know, they want to give their kids Italian names again.
Yeah.
Where my generation, it was Robert and John and, you know, things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel that there is a safety now to, and it's kind of stylish to, Italy is beautiful. It's beautiful to travel there, beautiful food, beautiful culture. So it's something that people are really embracing. And, you know, the World War II generation, and I love that series on PBS, the Italian American series. And it really, really made me realize that the World War II kind of generation, to go and fight in World War II was like an initiation in a way to being considered a real American, you know. All right, they're part of it now.
The interesting thing about that was, And I, you know, I still have my mom's mother and father, their alien registration card, almost like an enemy alien. And they had to have an ID card with their photo and everything. And they were in their 60s.
Wow.
Yeah. And what's funny about it is that, you know, initially at the start of the war, the Italians really weren't being considered that much for service and things like that. But then they had to take that stigma off because they needed all these Italian Americans to go fight. It changed pretty quick where they did away with that whole registration because, you know, take my uncles. I had four uncles that served in the war at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have been hard pressed for the government to draft these Italian Americans into the service if they were saying their parents were some kind of, you know, enemy aliens.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And you know, the German Americans really didn't have that stigma as much as the Italian Americans, surprisingly. Because I think they were here longer.
Interesting. Right. Exactly. They did come earlier. Exactly. For your background, were your relatives settled? Did they have their citizenship, or they must have been considered enemy aliens if they had a special card? Right?
Yeah. The only one who wasn't considered was my father's dad, who naturalized in 1939. So he was an American citizen, but my grandmother was not.
Okay.
So she had to have a card.
Oh, wow.
My mom's parents never became citizens.
Okay.
And they both had to have the you know, this alien
Wow.
registration card.
Because, you know, it, wow. And you hear so many stories of people, you know, having to go to different camps and things like that because they were
The
found
Italians
out.
Didn't, you know, the Italians, some went, but it wasn't as bad as the Japanese. And in New York, I don't think it was as bad as on the West Coast. For some reason,
Okay.
many of the Italians on the West Coast, like around San Francisco and places, from what I've seen and heard and read, that seems like more of them. But maybe there was a smaller community there. I'm not really sure what the reason was.
Sure.
But like I said, you know, all my uncles, you know, by the end of the war, my grandmother had four of her six sons were in the service. My one uncle was, he had a medical condition, so he didn't go in. And my other uncle was still in Italy. My oldest uncle was in Italy still with his family.
Yeah,
So he obviously didn't have to go. But
right.
thankfully, they all made it through. So
Exactly.
that was fine.
Yeah. Well, that's
so,
good.
so now what, you know, during your research, what interesting facts and things have you found out about your family?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
There are a lot of interesting things when we're talking about like this sort of fourth generation, sometimes the third generation too, just a sort of a circling back, a nostalgia for the past, and then coming to, you know, what it was 2007 where I did my tree. And then I, like a lot of people, I think, hit a brick wall because they're like, okay, I found out my some information, but they're not able to go further than what is in the United States, the records that are found in the United States. So I kind of set it aside for a while. It was the same with, I have a Polish, my mom's side is Polish and Irish and English and et cetera, et cetera. But we couldn't find that much information at that time. But then you know, advanced to 2019, and it's the summertime, and my mom often likes to DVR things that she finds interesting on New Jersey television for me. And she recorded a segment on one of her shows. She likes the CBS morning show on Sunday. I believe it was on that segment where they talked about juris sanguinis, immigration, where you can get citizenship. If you are, it doesn't matter if it was older than your grandparents or your parents or grandparents or even great grandparents. Certain people can still get their Italian citizenship. So, and I was like, wow, really? Like, wow, I could do that. That would be really cool. And I kind of, you know, got sort of stars in my eyes. So, really, that was sort of the spark of inspiration. But really, and to go to your question and the point of your question too, it's like I really that was sort of a motivating factor for me to go back to my tree and see that I was able to actually get more information than what I thought originally, and to start compiling the documentation for this, and also to discover whether or not you know, there are rules. I'm not going to go over it too much, but, you know, you have to have certain relatives who are settled at certain times. Like, for instance, my grandfather had to be born. Let's see, it was before my great grandparents, before they became American citizens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole, you know, kind of complicated rules around that. But just to like go through all the census information and see, okay, where you know, the years that they were marked as aliens, as you're mentioning, in the census, and what, you know, what years they appeared to be citizens and which years my, you know, which year my grandfather was born. And I discovered, yes, indeed, he fell in the right category. And so that's one discovery that was very, very happy for me to know that I do have a lineage where I can claim citizenship, or what the real term is, I am already an Italian citizen. It's just a matter of getting recognized, and that's a huge process, you know. So
I just got word. I started way too late. I wish I started before, but I just found out today that all my paperwork is done. So now I need to find the right person to get me into the council at a lot quicker than 4 or 5 years, or I have to figure out a way of doing this sooner, because I don't have as much time as you to get it done.
Yeah, I wish you the best with that. I know it's such a process. It takes a long time, whether you hire, you know, a lawyer or whatever help or support. It takes a while, especially with if you're in New Jersey, I believe you're in the New York consulate area.
It's in New York. Yeah. So do you know why they came? Did you get any story as to why they migrated?
I'm assuming that that it was all due to really, you know, poverty for sure. And just looking at the tenor of the country at that time, that it was Southern Italy was, you know, overpopulated, and it was just when they joined together as a nation, it really, there was a lot of stress and strain in Southern Italy. And so they came. And so I, through my research, I've been able to connect with other family members who are older, who did know, you know, a lot more of the situation in Italy. What was wonderful, with that, and I'll reconnect, when I did all this research, I started doing this research, I really got really involved with it. And I went down rabbit hole after rabbit hole. And a lot of people who are listening probably can relate to this, like, you know, staying up all night, like researching, because it's really fun. It's really engaging. It was a really fun activity to do, especially like during COVID, and actually even before that for me, just getting really involved and engaged. And there's this, you know, this really pretty much a lifelong dream to be able to contact a living relative who lives in Italy still. And so I was able to do that. And I did some research. So basically the whole inspiration for this research was the that in original spark was the immigration idea, but then to be able to dig into it and now see that there's records on Antonati, that things are being digitized at a record pace that we've never seen before. I know some people are still waiting on certain things, but still, it's an encouraging time where people can connect to their relatives, you know, better than ever with Facebook and everything else. So what was wonderful was my godfather, he was really interested in ancestry, and he was actually, I think he originally got into it when it was still a CD-ROM back in the late 90s. So I contacted him, and we kept asking my uncle, my great uncle, you know, where were we from? You know, he actually went back in the 1970s, and he went with his brother-in-law, and we were like, well, where did you go? Who did you see? And he's like, I don't know, talk to this guy. So he sort of, there was this relationship, like he was, they're interested in some aspects, but also not interested. And they sort of want to forget certain aspects of it, which is interesting. But through that, you know, I talked to my godfather and realized that my great grandfather in the photo here, he had a brother, and he actually had two daughters who stayed back in Italy, and the other two came. So I found, so those folks I was able to connect with first, And thankfully, there was one particular cousin who was especially excited to connect with me. And I was able to stay with her and meet her for the first time in October, September to October, the end of September to the beginning of October. And I reconnected with her, but then I started asking questions about, you know, these other people that I found on the passenger manifests. You know, I started asking about, you know, there's this Emilio that's showing up. You know, that's the really wonderful thing I started doing to really educate myself about Italian immigration. I went and genealogy. I went to some videos, and you might have heard about this before, the whole concept of the fan club. You've tried to find the friends, the neighbors, friends, family, neighbors. And it really seems to me like this sort of Paisan connection, this like magical Paisan connection. Because they, you know, when I envisioned this when I was younger, I thought, you know, oh, it's like this lonely person coming over on the ship all by themselves trying to make a new life. But really it was, they had a whole community who was doing this at the same time. And they had contacts and they had people. And unfortunately, I don't know the story of how and why exactly they came over, but it was fascinating to find that's the real secret with this research. And it's where we have to think outside the box, right? So you look at a manifest, you find your great grandfather, grandfather, and you can see who they are arriving with. You know, who have they come over with? Who else came over from your town? From that town. And I started researching their families, you know? So this side of the family here is from Frosinone. It's a municipality of Verrali and a little village within Verrali. And so just finding all these people who are from Verrali coming over was just fantastic. And then also seeing my great-grandfather's brother who he went with, and I realized that my great aunt and great uncle, both of them came from the same village, which was really neat. I didn't realize that. I thought maybe they were from, you know, different areas in Italy, but they actually both of their fathers were from the same village, so they had that whole connection of their people. And to see, oh yeah, like, you know, my aunt's father and that great uncle, great uncle I was talking about, they actually traveled to Canada at one point together. It was really interesting to see all these really neat connections. So I made a connection with, there was this Emilio I kept seeing, and I made, I just inquired with my cousin in the village. And also I started friending. That's the other secret too, to start friending people on Facebook who might know things with the same surname and things, and maybe somebody will answer you. Thankfully, they very warm, very kind folks there in that village and were able to answer me. Not everybody answers me, but a lot of people, they do help me out. And one man, he really gave me some information and was able to tell me a lot about my Emilio side. And then people started friending me on Facebook, and I connected with a man, and he was able to shed some light on, you know, the harshness, the poverty that they faced. And his mother her name is Anna. And she apparently, so this area, it's outside of Rome, about a couple hours. And it's known as La Ciociaria. It's kind of like this, it's kind of carved out of the mountains, and it basically makes up Frosinone. And apparently the women in that area were known for their health and their good breast milk. So they would be often asked to be the wet nurses, or not asked, but hired to be the wet nurses. Hmm. So I found out that she was the wet nurse for he's still actually alive, part of the royal family, Vittorio Emanuele. called a he's the Prince of Naples. He calls himself the Duke of Savoy. So she was the wet nurse for him and was taken to the coast at the holiday residence. And she had basically a lifelong relationship with the little boy, with the prince, and they would write back and forth to each other. So she has photographs of him. And when I went over to Italy, I was able to visit with Anna's son and see all the photographs that he put together in the photo album. It was just really beautiful. And that same family, it seemed like she was very social because she was writing to a lot of people. This correspondence was amazing. And somehow he had this photograph here. He had a copy of that. This is my grandfather's wedding. He had that photograph there. And it was amazing to see that he had this stuff that, you know, didn't even realize that there was much of a correspondence back and forth, because I was told that my relatives couldn't read or write, or could barely read or write, from that side of the family. So it was amazing, really, really touching to see that he had that document. And another thing was that he said, you know, I remember going back to the World War II soldiers. He's like, I remember my aunt's in her home that she had displayed. It looked like the front page of a newspaper and the font like the New York Times. And it was the soldiers that went to World War II. And I would always ask who they were. And I was told they were my cousins from America who fought, you know, for, you know, Italy's independence, freedom, I mean. And so it was really moving to hear about that. I'm like, I know that article. So I found it. And now, you know, he didn't have that article still, but he remembered it. And one really poignant moment I had, this trip was just a beautiful time. And part of the trip was where my grandfather was stationed in Anzio Beachhead during World War II. And actually, here's the brothers here. I know I'm doing this quickly, but you get the idea. The brothers are all together on the corner there. They were stationed in Anzio, and it was really interesting for me to think about this. And the Italian American series from PBS really helped kind of hit this home that, like, okay, my grandfather's father came from that same region, that same Lazio area. And now his son is going back over there to fight hand-to-hand combat in his own country. You know, like, it's, the other brothers were in other places, whether in Europe or in the, you know, Philippines, South Pacific, but it was just amazing to think about that. And so when I was there, thankfully I stayed with another cousin from Emilio's lineage in Rome, and him and I had a wonderful afternoon, and we went to the Anzio Beachhead Museum. So that this is one thing that your listeners might be interested in too, if you have any World War II vets in the family who were stationed in Italy. If you go back, there could be a museum in the area where they were stationed. I went back and we got to talking to the man who was at the museum, and he was interested to hear that my grandfather was there, a veteran, and he was very congratulatory toward me, you know. Of course, posthumously for my grandfather, you know, and he presented me with this beautiful certificate. He asked what his name was, and he created this beautiful certificate. And he told me, if you have any photographs or anything, to send them to him, that he would include them in his beautiful museum. And it was just wonderful. He's the president of the museum. And also he presented me with a book for free. And it just compared the landscape of what it looked like during World War II times in that Anzio area and what it looks like now. And sort of, and it was really neat. I gave it to my dad so that he can have it at home. But it was a beautiful thing. And he presented it to me. And see, I can understand a lot. I can communicate with, you know, a lot of the kind of the niceties and the different phrases that you would use in Italian, basic phrases. But I could understand what he said. He said, "Well, this book is nothing. You know, you helped to your grandfather helped to provide, you know, freedom for Italy." I was like, "Oh." And for the rest of the afternoon, I'm kind of crying, you know, calling my family back home and stuff. So it was really a beautiful time to be there. Anzio Beachhead. So I think he's getting those materials ready for, you know, I just sent those things over to him, which is a beautiful thing. So a lot of these experiences are very special, and to reconnect with living relatives, that's something that's I'm passionate about. Like, and I see, especially in your group too, that people are really interested in reconnecting with living relatives. And that's something that I do. I've been so moved by this experience with genealogy that I'm working toward my board certification as a genealogist. I do have a background in research with cultural research as an ethnomusicologist, as well as a music teacher. And so that's something that I've started helping people with. And it's a really beautiful thing. Have you ever reconnected or connected with any living relatives?
Well, yeah, I am. And I didn't know up until, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years now, maybe a little more. I didn't know that I had anybody over there. And I think, you know, Facebook has its issues, but it's certainly a great tool to be able to find people around the world. That's for sure. And one of the very first that I connected with, my mom's family, maybe distant. I haven't really been able to find anybody there, but and most of her family had come over. My father's family, from his father's side, only my grandfather's brother had come over. They had a sister who was a nun over there, and another brother, at least one more brother, over there. And my grandmother, I didn't know if she had brothers, sister. I didn't know anything. Nobody ever talked about her or anything like that. The only thing I remember from like 40 years ago, my father mentioning that for some reason out of the blue, he said that there was family in Torre del Greco near Naples. And but one of the very first people that I connected with, my grandmother's maiden name was Piermalo. And it's not a very common name because it's from Spain. They originally from Spain. And so I just went out there and I, you know, started looking for Piermalos. And I found my cousin Cinzia. She's a fourth cousin. And she started a Facebook group, Piermalo, thinking that she would find people from Spain or South America because the family originally came from Spain. She had no idea there was anybody in America. So when she found me, or I found her, whichever the case may be, I don't remember. We were both kind of like shocked because, again, nobody ever said that there was real family over there. Wow. So through her, she confirmed a lot of things that I had known. And I started finding, you know, more and more and more relatives. You know, mostly fourth cousins, maybe then the generation up from her would be third cousins, like my generation. She's in the generation behind us. And, but I've told this on a couple of the most recent ones. When we did go over there last year, I was contacted by my dad's first cousin, half first cousin, that I never knew existed. Oh. And he's got the same name as my father. because his grandfather and my father's grandfather, although he's younger than me, because my grandfather married a woman 30 years younger than him, that, you know, that's a whole story in and of itself. but he took us to the home of my father's first cousins from my grandmother's youngest brother. These women were both in their 90s. I had no idea. Nobody ever talked about them. I had no idea that they even existed. So to find, you know, my first cousins once removed and meet them in Italy was just beyond anything I ever thought I would find when I started this stuff. And they were just so great. Wow, I mean, everything fantastic. Was, you know, they were just so wonderful. So, you know, I tell people all the time, you have to go in there, put the names in. If you know what a town, go into the, you know, sometimes there's a group for the town. You know, my group on Facebook, which is, I never thought I'd hit 10,000 people in there, but I see more and more people finding each other in there because they'll say that my family's from this place and here's my last name. Oh, I have them in my family. And they're making connections through there, which I, you know, blows me away because I never expect that. I thought maybe I'd have 100 or 200 in there.
Yeah, actually, that happened to me too. Exactly. In your group, because for the other side of my father's side is from Capri. Somebody was asking about something about Capri, and I don't always hear about people researching, you know, in that area. And so I put a comment, and then somebody sent a message also, and I connected with somebody somehow through there, and it turned out that we were, you know, matches, as a family matches. So we're still trying to figure out how we are all connected, but that's something that, if you don't mind me saying, I started a Capri genealogy group. You could find that facebook.com/group/Capri genealogy. And it's been nice to be able to connect and have a place to start to discuss these things. And I'm starting to find some really interesting people joining the group with really interesting stories. So if there's, you know, if there's anybody out there that does have some Capri relatives that they're researching, that would be wonderful. That's the thing, the Capri part of it. Now, with the citizenship, of course, it's easier and to go with the male lineage to gain the citizenship or the recognition of the citizenship. So my other great grandparents from Capri, they actually, when my great grandfather brought over my great grandmother, they came to the United States and they were already citizens. He was able to get citizenship right there and right away. So that meant that I couldn't really gain citizenship from that side.
So with Capri, because remember we were talking earlier, I said my godfather, my father's sister's husband, his last name was Di Maria, and I think his mother's name, I think her last name was Strina, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check. But like I said, he was born in Capri, and he was 16 when he came over, so probably about 19, I guess maybe around, let's see, they got married in 34, probably early 1900s, he came over, and he wound up being in the restaurant business when he got here. I don't know if it was by design or by accident. I don't know the whole story, but
where did he live in the U.S.?
They came. They wound up in Whitestone. I guess he must have lived in Manhattan when he first came over, because I know that's where all the restaurants were and everything. My dad grew up in Corona in Queens. So there's some sort of connection to there, but I don't think he lived in Corona. I'd have to go back and check
maybe more
the census again.
White Plains area, or Westchester
they
County.
They stay pretty much. Mm-hmm. They stay pretty much in New York. My whole family.
Okay.
I know at one point, my dad was actually born in Scotch Plains, New Jersey.
Ah, wonderful. Yeah.
but he was, he was the only one. His oldest sister was born in Manhattan, and then his three older siblings were all born in Italy. So.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to talk to you more, about the Capri connection there.
It's not a big place.
Yeah. I know that's the thing, but it seems vast in a way. When I start researching it, it's almost more vast than the village that the paternal side comes from, which is interesting, because I start looking at my tree, other people's trees, people have the same names, but there's no common people in them. It's really interesting. They have like hundreds of people, but they're not matching up, which is really interesting. I'm like, where's the common, I'm always trying to find who the common people are.
Yeah.
That thread through these trees,
Well, that's why my dad's mother was so easy, because there's only one Piombalo family in all of Italy. That's it. So it's, there's kind of sort of two, but they're the same. And because what was driving me crazy with that family was they're a noble family. And when I found a great grandfather, Nicola Piermalo, he was connected to Emilio Caracciolo from another noble family, but I couldn't find him under the Piermalo family in the Libro di Oro. I was going nuts and I could not figure this out. And because I knew it had to be the same family, but he wasn't listed there. His father wasn't listed there. My great great grandfather's siblings weren't listed there. And I eventually, with the help of Cinzia, what happened was that my great grandmother, my third great grandmother, was Beatrice Capici Piccicelli. And she inherited the title from her brother as Duchess of Capricotta, because her brother had no male heirs. So very unusual for an Italian woman to actually get the title, but there was nobody else to give it to.
Uh-huh.
So she got it.
Yeah.
Her son became the Duke. And when he became the Duke, he merged the family names. So at one time it was Capice, then it was Piccicelli. Those two families merged at one point. Well, he put the Piermalo in front of it, because the Capice Piccicelli, they were, I guess they were more famous or more noble than the Piermalo family. And the way my cousin says it, well, we had all the money, but they had the name, so he changed it. Anyway, that's what happened.
Oh, wow.
So when you look at the Libro di Oro, that's why his family, the heir's family, the Duke that inherited the title, they were Piermalo Capici Piccicelli. But all the other children, his brothers and sisters, still have just the Piermalo name, and that's not recognized because the title all went down that one line, so they don't show up there. So, and it took me, I can't tell you why, it was making me crazy. But I do have the birth records. I have the birth records of my grandfather. I have his father's birth records showing that he's the son of the Duchess and the Count. But they don't show up on the nobility under this family because of the way they changed the names. And, I said to Cinzia, she said, yes, that's the way they did. But we're the real family. And they had, with her help, what I've been able to put together is my third great grandfather owned at least 5 or 6 homes throughout Calabria, Naples, Sicily. And this, some of them are still there. Unfortunately, I don't own any of them, but we did go to a couple. Yeah. We did see a couple.
So nice to go there. Yeah.
And I'll tell you one funny story. When we went to the one in outside of Naples, in in Mesa di Somma, it's now like, I guess it's like an apartment type of thing. You know, the palazzo has all been split up, but the cresta is still in the ceiling and on the floor and all that. And they brought me into this courtyard and they said, look up, you see this, that second floor balcony or window? I said, yeah. They said, well, your third great grandfather, Giacomo, he would, when it was his birthday, he would roast the pig and he would get all the peasants drunk and then throw money off of the balcony.
Oh, wow.
I said, well, that's not the nicest story that you want to hear about your grandfather. But
never a dull moment in these stories. So many juicy stories. Yeah, like that. That's, wow.
and you know, so through them, I've been able to trace back to, 30, 40 noble families in Italy.
Wow.
And that's what's in my book, the stories of some of these families, and talk about juicy. And the reason I did it was because we know about the nobility and the royalty and you know, Spain and Italy, and not Italy, Germany, yeah, and England and France. But nobody realizes, people don't understand that up until 1860, Italy was all these little fiefdoms and dukedoms and, you know, who was fighting who and who was marrying who and who was poisoning who. And so, you know, when I went through the list of these people, I think it's the Orsini family,
mm-hmm,
that there's in my line, there were five great grandfathers who all were the justice of the certain town or area. And the justice was basically the guy who would sign the death penalty. And it was the son, the father, the grandfather, the great father for five generations. It was like almost like the family business that these guys were the chief executioners for this town.
Wow.
Now, my mother's family comes from farmers in Torito Bari. And, I kept going through those records and it was a farmer, farmhand, seamstress, farmer, seamstress, farmhand.
You know, yeah.
And then finally I found like one of them going back into like, you know, maybe 1700 something, 1780 or something like that. He was like a forest ranger. And I was like, oh, finally somebody in this family did something other than being a farmer.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It's very interesting. And then it just opens the door to start to research, well, what was that culture like in my great grandfather's village, or that area, region, La Chocheria, the traditions that are part of that area, which is just fantastic. I started kind of getting into that. I keep holding this up. This is my own personal copy. Actually, a cousin of mine printed this up for me, but it was a project I put together, how my great grandparents, this set of great grandparents, how they immigrated to the United States. And it was wonderful. I put it together for Christmas of 2021 for my relatives, and then I had to like revise it six times over the rest year because all of a sudden different things changed and all of a sudden people were from out of the woodwork came and told me some very interesting stories, how it's related to different people. Or one thing that was really wonderful to find out was that, everybody in my dad's, like a lot of the Italian folks in my dad's town growing up in New Jersey, they could probably all be related to each other in some particular way, whether by blood or by marriage, really. A lot of people married to each other. And I'm not suggesting incest here, but I'm saying that, like, this person married this person, but this person is my great grandfather and this person is this, and they're all kind of connected within that family. So it's interesting to know that my great grandfather, his cousins came to the town and then One particular cousin, a descendant of, let's see, he would have been the son of a, so he'd be a second generation. His name is Muzzy Mazzoni, and he actually is a very a drummer, very very fine drummer. He passed away in Las Vegas. He worked with Gene Krupa and Tommy
Oh, wow.
Dorsey. He even constructed his own drums. His own custom drums. And I've actually, even through that, just the lineage of, he also was a well-known music teacher in that area. And connecting with his old students was really interesting, because people would be in these public groups on Facebook talking about him. And it's just fantastic. So it's really interesting, these connections. And also realizing that a lot of the Italians, like I said, were actually connected in some way. It makes me feel like that there's just this larger community than just my family. And I love the way that they lived. It's a sad thing. They spent about 100 years in this particular town in New Jersey, and they all lived on the same streets, could walk and see each other. And I realize, there's such a change, and why I do this work too, is that there's such a change in society. And my generation, or me personally, in my family, it's a first generation where we didn't live in close proximity to our other generations. Grandparents, could you walk to the corner store and see your grandparent or aunt or uncle or cousin? My mom grew up in Jersey City, and she was living in the same building as her grandparents or aunts and uncles and things like that. So they're right there. And so to be in a separate town, and my grandmother was 7 miles away or so, or 7 minutes away by car, but it's a big change, I think. So our lifestyle has changed so drastically in the last 50 years, that there are so many things about the memories that people hold now that are really precious. And I just try to engage with people as much as possible and get, as many stories and information that I can, because things are changing so rapidly that it's just never going to be the same again,
Yeah, well, that's and that's this, a few of us older guys, because my parents' generation is pretty much gone, and there's a bunch of us now are trying to preserve as much of that as we can. And that's why when I was talking in the pre-interview, that I'm trying to put this Ken Burns style type of thing together with people who, if they have movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and if you're listening, get in touch with me if you have it, to try and put something together like that to show how we grew up. Because, some of those things about the Italians and things are great, but a lot of it focuses around, Frank Sinatra and Joe DiMaggio and those people. It doesn't show the regular families like us. And to your point, I spent every Sunday at my grandmother's, every Sunday and Thursday, because my mother used to take care of my grandmother on Thursday. So it was her turn. And we didn't live in the close, but we lived close enough and we were there all the time. But a couple of my uncles lived in the same town. So, I would walk to my uncle's if he was going to my grandmother's on Sunday in Corona from College Point. I'd walk to my uncle's and he'd let me drive the car when I was 12 years old. There was a one long straightaway, and he'd sit on his lap and drive the car. You don't do that anymore. But this was 1960, so you could get away with
I
that kind of
know.
stuff. And there was the
It's
big
so
old
different
steering
back
wheel like
then.
this. But so, that's what I want to try and preserve, is to show people, not necessarily, Italian parades or things like that, but just that. I have my parents' wedding on film, and my other friend Tommy has his parents from 1939 on film, to just show that we were assimilating, but we still had our own culture.
That's it.
So that's the goal. I hope it works out, but we'll have to see.
Right. I really do feel like, you know, Italian American culture, and it could be different in whatever city or region in the U.S. or wherever else in diasporas all over the world. But, you know, there is a specific culture that things were changed and morphed in so many different ways. But we do things differently here in North America, you know, a little bit differently.
I have a friend now in Australia through something that I'm working on. And it's not that much different in Australia. Calabrese Australians are like Calabrese Americans.
isn't that interesting? Yes. And finding those commonalities. Really wonderful.
Because there's still that tie back to the culture, yes, and the dialect and all of that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. That brings me, reminds me of that feeling I felt going back to my great grandfather's village, that feeling of home, that it's like the root of the family was there. It's, indescribable and like really precious to be able to have that feeling of rootedness that I felt like I was almost searching for, like seeking my whole life, you know, just that feeling of, wow, okay, I get it now. I don't have to feel like I'm floating around. I think that there has been certain things generationally that have come down. And now that we feel safer, that we can go back and kind of revisit these things and sort of heal sort of generational things. Maybe certain aspects of the culture had to be sort of forgotten about, maybe the language, and other things that some of us now are kind of going back and revisiting and things like that and kind of healing in certain ways, because that it's a traumatic thing to immigrate to a country, you know, and leaving your country and never seeing your family again, perhaps, you know. And actually during this time, I also was becoming an immigrant myself. I live in Canada and I'm outside of Montreal. So it's interesting. I grew up an hour outside of New York City, but now I'm out an hour outside of Montreal. And those folks, generally, they came in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. So they actually have, a lot of them still speak Italian. So they're trilingual up here. So it's really, it's really fantastic to go to, you know, they call it the Italian Week, Montreal Italian Week. But actually it's more like a few weeks in August where they have this nice festival, a lot of events and things, but just to see how trilingual, these things can be. I've been able to make some good contacts with the community here, so that, you know, it's really a wonderful thing. I'm really, really grateful. I wanted to, if you don't mind, mention about Capri for a minute. We were talking about correspondence back and forth. It was discovered in the last couple of years that there's been a lot of correspondence between New York, my family who was in Westchester County, New York, and Capri, back and forth. And we do still have some, and also to cousins that were in Philadelphia and different areas. And we discovered a lot of postcards and photographs of when my they actually did maintain a relationship, and I was able to visit one cousin that was in, she's elderly, so it's hard to get any information from her, but in Capri right now. And with some of the digitized slides that we had, my sister scanned them in, and we have this collection of beautiful slides from 1962 when my great grandmother was just a beautiful elder, and with her daughter, and posed with many relatives, and I didn't know who they were. And it was interesting to be able to now post those photos in a group. I did it very discreetly, just one or two of them, to see what would happen in one particular group. And people were able to recognize it was just, and the one man is still alive that was a sailor. Really it's a very beautiful thing. That's one thing that I'm really, trying to work on, that Capri lineage.
No, it's great to get those photos. And the same thing with me when we came back from Italy, my cousin Nicola went through some of his mom's stuff and sent me photographs of my grandmother's brothers that I had never seen before. So that's really, really cool.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
All right.
This was a wonderful time to be together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino, just letting you know that my new book, Farmers and Nobles, is now available for sale on www.italiangenealogy.blog/farmersandnobles, or you can find the link in the podcast notes. Thanks for listening.